For the first time in more than a decade, there's news the death rate in America has gone up. This is a human story, a healthcare story, even an economics of insurance story. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Some disturbing data from the Centers for Disease Control today. A report finds the death rate for Americans has risen. It had been going down for years. Joining us from the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia is Dan Gorenstein. Dan, what may be driving this trend in the wrong direction?
Well, before I get into it, David, I want to be clear. This is preliminary federal data. That said, researchers note this is one of just a few times in the past 25 years the death rate has gone up. The stats point to a climb in Alzheimer's, shootings, drug overdoses, suicides. Deaths from heart disease, which typically go down, were essentially flat last year.
This report seems to, I think, square with some previous research that mortality for whites in the U.S. is going up.
That's right. For one, Ann Case and Angus Deaton from Princeton last year found that death rates among whites, particularly those with less education, rose due primarily to drug and alcohol abuse and suicide. There was a separate study on white women which drew similar conclusions. Here's what Jennifer Karras-Montez of Syracuse University told the BBC program The Inquiry recently.
Between 1990 and 2010, life expectancy of low-educated white women declined by 1.2 years. So, in essence, that 1.2 years is about 13 years of progress washed away. So what seem to be minor changes in life expectancy are really, they signal really big problems going on underneath the surface.
You know, she talks about underneath the surface, David, and that may be the most alarming part of all of this work. On top of the rise in mortality, Case and Deaton found declines in self-reported health, mental health, the ability to work, and living with more pain also was up. These findings raise the question whether the spike in white mortality is driving the larger death trend noted by the CDC. A final report is due out later this year.
All right, we'll watch for that. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you very much. If you want to hear the whole show about one piece of this phenomenon produced by our partners at the BBC, it's called What's Killing White American Women. We put up a handy link at the Marketplace APM Facebook page. Let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is down 0.7%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down in the 2-3% range. Twenty years ago, Congress and the president then, Bill Clinton, made sweeping changes to the welfare system in this country. But if you ask Americans what welfare is today and how it works, we found people aren't so sure. Which brings us to a new series that Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty team has launched called The Uncertain Hour, hosted by Marketplace's senior correspondent Chrissy Clark. Chrissy checks in with us from time to time on this. Today, how this played out at the state level. Good morning, Chrissy.
Hey, David.
So this program was about welfare to work. That was the headline. But it also changed how states get their money from the federal government?
Yeah, so what you need to understand about welfare today is that after welfare reform, states got a block grant, basically a set amount of money each year, and a lot more flexibility to decide how best to serve their poor residents. But the way that the federal welfare reform law was written, there are lots of other legal ways to spend this block grant money that don't sound a whole lot like welfare. For example, encouraging people to get married. It's opened a door for states to have much more flexibility in where welfare dollars go than perhaps even Congress intended.
And to that end, I think, what, you went to Oklahoma, where promoting marriage is one of the places that federal and state welfare money is going. What's the program there?
Right. So this money funds marriage classes, relationship skills. The whole idea is that with two incomes, you're more likely to escape poverty. So let's encourage long-term relationships. But not everyone thinks that this is the best way to help families in need. I talked to a woman named Devon Douglas at the Oklahoma Policy Institute.
When I bring this up, you know, there's kind of a quizzical look on their face, and they think, is the government like doing a matchmaking service? Like, does TANF help Tinder? Like, how does this work exactly?
Again, TANF is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program there. But marriage promotion is not where all of Oklahoma's welfare funds are going to, right?
No, it's a relatively small portion of Oklahoma's overall welfare spending. It's about 5%. But that in dollars is about $9 million a year on marriage and preventing out-of-wedlock pregnancy. And to put that in perspective, only $18 million a year goes to cash for poor families, what we think of when we think of a welfare check. And that's driven another statistic that alarms poverty researchers. Just 7 out of 100 families living in poverty in Oklahoma actually get cash assistance. A woman named Laura Grennan is a good example of this. She's currently living in a Salvation Army shelter in Tulsa with her two children. She gets food stamps, but when she spoke with her caseworker about applying for cash assistance,
and he turned around and said, no, you don't need to, you want to.
I spoke with an official at the Oklahoma Department of Human Services, and he acknowledged that this kind of thing, caseworkers discouraging people from signing up for welfare, does happen in his state and that they're trying to change this. But he was very frank that he thinks not enough cash assistance goes to poor families in his state. And by the way, Oklahoma is not the only state that's shifted its welfare spending around. Our digital team has actually produced this spending database for every state in the country so you can see for yourself where welfare dollars are going.
All right, Chrissy Clark of our Wealth and Poverty team. You can find out about the database. You can listen to the full Uncertain Hour podcast and read about our collaboration with Slate. It's at marketplace.org/theuncertainhour. Chrissy, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Chrissy is also hosting a live chat on Twitter today at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, 10 a.m. Pacific. The Mountain Time Zone can interpret it, I guess. Send your questions and input about welfare as we know it using hashtag WelfareTalk if you'd like to hang out with us. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.